I am your host, Steven, and you are listening to the Learn Swift Podcast, where beginners to the Swift language share their background, experiences, lessons learned, and ambitions. On today's episode, I interview Graham Shepherd. Graham is a high school physics teacher in Thailand who has released numerous sticker packs and two apps on the App Store. He is currently working on an app he calls Working Class to aid teachers in their day-to-day workflows.
Hey, Graham, welcome to the show.
Hello, welcome. Thank you.
How are you doing today?
Very good, thank you. Yes, it's a nice, cool day here in Thailand.
Awesome. What time is it there? In my part of the world, it is about 10 after 8 in the evening.
Yeah, we're quite a bit different. So it's just gone 9 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. Cool. So is it Sunday or Monday there right now?
It's Monday. So okay. Just started my school break. So I've got a bit of downtime.
Okay, cool. I think I hear the birds chirping in the background, I think.
Yes, you probably can. That's
awesome. What kind of birds are those?
That sounds like I'm trying to think what it is. It's an Asian curl, that one. Huh.
Very, very interesting bird song. We'll have a nice ambiance for the show then. So what's your background, Graham?
Well, I trained as an engineer. So I went to university doing engineering and then started off as an engineer in my career as well. And then after about 5 years of doing that, I decided to switch over to teaching. And so I've been a teacher ever since that.
Was it like a software engineer or were you like mechanical engineer? I mean, there's all sorts of engineering.
That's right. Yeah. So I did material science. So I went into reliability engineering as my job.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I've worked with quite a few non-computer related engineers in my time. So yeah, I did a lot of manufacturing related stuff. So yeah, cool. Glad I kind of understand it a little bit. Not the material side as much, but it's definitely an interesting field.
It is an interesting field, yeah. I just kind of decided after a while that I didn't really want to be in engineering. So, I wanted to get out and do something different. I enjoyed the teaching.
So what kind of teaching did you transition to, like high school or university?
Yeah, I did a year of lecturing at university, but that was earlier on. Now I'm a high school teacher, so I teach physics.
That's cool. So what has that been like going from being a material science engineer to teaching at lecturing at university to teaching high school students?
Obviously it's completely different. The strange thing was I actually found it a lot more hard work becoming a teacher as well. Always kind of thought that teaching would be a bit more relaxed, but it's just I enjoy working with people. When I was an engineer, the part that I enjoyed the most was actually trying to train the junior engineers, train the operators on what they were doing. So I just realized that was what I really loved as my job. So I transitioned over to teaching.
That's cool. So, and you said you've been doing, did you say you were teaching for about 5 years now?
No, I've been teaching for about 14 years now. So it's about five years as an engineer and then about 14 years teaching.
Okay. Well, that's pretty interesting. So, and have you been in Thailand this whole time?
Been in Thailand for, actually all that time. So all of my career. So basically I finished university. So I went to university to be as an engineer. So I did material science as a bachelor's degree. I did a PhD as well in physics and material science related. And then straight after that, I came out to Thailand.
What was the motivation to move to Thailand?
My wife, basically. We started material science at the same time and she's Thai. And essentially, we decided at the end to come over to Thailand. Yes, it's a lovely place to live. It's a very nice, pleasant lifestyle as well.
That's awesome. So what got you into Swift and iOS development?
Well, I've always I've always been interested in programming. So, you know, since I was a kid, I enjoyed elements of programming. So I had a ZX Spectrum, Commodore 64, and I'd do tiny little bits there. And essentially just throughout, you know, when I was at university, when I was in engineering, I'd always do little bits of programming, never anything particularly like nothing structured, no big projects, just, you know, some scripts here, some VBA programming in Excel and things like that, just to help things go along. And I just kind of decided when Swift came out, probably Swift 2, I'm not sure, but around that time, I just thought, actually, I could make something a bit more concrete.
What was the first project idea that, like, was there anything that kind of kicked off the idea that you wanted to make apps in particular? Because I know whenever I had toyed around with programming before when I was like in my younger days, and it never really clicked. I had done some stuff in Excel with VBA, like you did as well, to, you know, help with various things, but nothing really groundbreaking or anything. What drew you specifically to want to program for iOS devices and in Swift?
Before that, just tell you that I, as a teacher, I decided to, we made this like online assignment system. So basically it was all based in Google Chrome. And the idea is that students can do some homeworks and they get feedback on it, they get marked on it. And that became like a real project. And that gave me the idea that, oh, I could actually make something that was a product by itself. You know, we just use it within our own school, but that was really the first thing that I did that was its own thing. And from that came the idea of like, okay, so what else can I do? My wife had this idea of a financial calculator, which I thought, well, I've already done it in Numbers and it works there. So could I turn that into an app so that more people might be, you know, if we put it on the App Store, more people might be able to make use of it.
Did you ever make that?
Yeah, I did. Yes. It's called InvestCal and it's on the App Store. It's really geared towards Thai investment schemes. So I'm not sure how wide and interest it would have. And I think I've had quite a lot of downloads because it was free. I say quite a lot, but, you know, in the hundreds, not massive. And had about 5 people buying it. But basically, I say it's Thai-based because in Thailand, we've got like insurance brokers who will, they sell insurance and they'll be very, very creative with the way that they tell you the percentage return and things like that. So I wanted to have something which would create a like bank equivalent interest rate.
Okay, interesting. I'd imagine you probably only released that to the Thai App Store since it's.
Yeah, probably should have done. I mean, we released it worldwide because didn't really think about any. Well, it's our first app we put up on the App Store, and it's just, oh yeah, just release it. So it's got Thai or English language options in it. But yeah, I mean, it's free to download. So we kind of thought it doesn't matter if anyone around the world chooses to download it. Maybe they'll get some use. It's, you know, it is general use to some extent, but I'm not sure how applicable it would be to how other like insurance packages work around the world.
Right. Yeah. So I had looked at you have a website, Apps and Living.
Yes.com.
And I had looked at it and I see you have a bunch of sticker packs. Did you design all of the stickers?
No, my wife designs all the stickers. So she draws them. Yeah. She actually got an iPad with Procreate and just really got into drawing.
Well, she does a really good job at it. I mean, I got my wife an iPad with Procreate on it as well. And bless her heart, nothing like that came out of it yet.
Thank you. Yeah.
So I didn't see your calculator on there, otherwise I would have asked you about it. But
yeah, the Apps and Living website's a new one. We're just like I'm transitioning at the moment from our other one, which was like Pomelo Tree blog, a WordPress thing. I'm just starting to put our apps on there, and then we'll put the stickers over on there as well.
Okay. And I see that you have an app that you recently released called Latte Pilates.
Yes. Yeah. We had that idea, like, it's actually only 4 weeks ago we had the idea for it. So part of this was being like this really quite crazy kind of trying to quickly code something and get it out, and being pretty pleased with how well it's come out.
Yeah, it's all from what I was able to look at it, it's all has your wife's her artwork in there for the drinks and the way everything looks. I mean, it all looks like all custom made, and I'm guessing by your wife.
That's
from
right,
what you
yes.
said.
Yeah, definitely.
What was that process like? Work so you kind of have your own tiny little team with you and your wife. How does that work? Do you give your wife some deliverables? Like, I need these assets by the end of the week.
It hasn't quite worked. I mean, we've been such a fast turnaround on this one. It's partly been she's been drawing them. So can you put this in as well? And it will be occasionally of like, right, I need a button. What can you draw me a button, please? And that sort of thing. But apart from that, we've just been together, just going through, she's done a lot of the research in terms of the drinks. So she was going through thinking what drinks she needs to, draw, all the lattes, all the frappuccinos and all those things. So she's been creating all that artwork, and then I've been just trying to get the app to work. So yeah, it's quite a nice, we bring completely different skills to a project like this.
So before we talk any more about it, will you explain for the audience what Latte Pilates does?
Yeah, so the idea was that we wanted something that you can help to like balance the calorie intake that you're having from drinks, because it's something we've been concerned about. So, we enjoy going off to coffee shops and they really do pile in the calories. But we've got this concept of like empty calories where essentially you're not getting any nutritional goodness from the drinks. It's just really enjoyable. So we're wanting to be able to track that. So the idea in the app is that you open it up, go through the menu, choosing the drinks you're wanting. So a lot of it, to be honest, is based on drinks in Starbucks, but it's not just those drinks that are in there. And you go through, find a particular latte, and it will tell you the number of calories that are in it. You then can choose if you want to add cream, go to a light version, or change the amount of sugar in there, and it will just update the number of calories on the fly. So it gives you a way to see what it is you're about to order, and then maybe to change your options, change to a smaller one, and just keep track of it as well. So then you can like confirm it, and it'll go into your history and just basically monitor how many calories you're drinking in your drinking in your drinks.
That's pretty interesting, because at least I don't know about in Thailand. I'm sure it's in the US. I think most of the, if not all of like any of the major chains have to make their nutrition information available, but it's still not very easy to access. And it's not very convenient anyway. You got to like go to their website, and you might actually have to be on a computer, and then you got to download a PDF, and then you've got to look at it through there. Whereas this is pretty cool, where you just kind of pick what kind of drink you're going to get, and you can kind of get a good idea of what you're about to consume.
Yeah. And the other thing we found as well is that the information on those sites isn't always correct. It's not that they're trying to do anything wrong or whatever, but we'll go through them. So we spent quite a lot of time on those websites trying to get the information and break it down. Because we didn't just want to take like, okay, there's a pumpkin spice latte here and it says it's 300 calories. We didn't just take that. We try and break down how much of that's from the milk, from the sugar and things like that, so we can calculate in advance. And we just went through and just spotted occasionally they've clearly used like no milk in the calorie calculation when they're meant to be using the 0% fat milk, which contains calories. Yeah, so it's not many mistakes, but there are errors in and things missing on that data as well.
That's pretty interesting. I can think of times where like you're looking at something, it's like, this is what it is without cheese, and it's like, well, when am I going to order this without, like, this obviously is like a burger or something, but like, when am I going to get this burger without cheese? Like,
yeah.
But so I'm looking at your screenshots right now, and your icons are I really like the icons. So is this a tab bar controller that you used at the bottom, and then you had your own custom icons for down at, is that what that is down at the bottom?
Yeah, the custom. Well, what we've done is I decided I haven't used any of the kind of like navigational bars or anything like that this time. So that is just a UI view at the bottom containing five buttons. And yeah, those are, yeah, so the images that my wife drew to put onto the buttons. So basically all the buttons on there are UI buttons rather than navigation bars.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious, because I mean it's structured like it would be a like a tab bar controller. Essentially, you just kind of made your own tab bar controller then.
Essentially, yeah. Cause, I mean, to be honest, I've never really used a tab bar controller, and because I was trying to make this quite quickly, I just went with a UI view. You know, I'm still really struggling with how to lay out views conveniently in a way that I can go and edit them later on. So this just seemed to make sense for me.
Well, it looks nice. So I'll give you that. I mean, thank I you. Don't know how it looks under the hood, but I mean, it looks nice. And like I said, all the artwork was pretty nice for whenever you did your, I see that you have a bar graph on here. Mm-hmm. What is that's tracking the daily calories. Is the bar that runs across, is that supposed to be the average, or is that a target?
That's a target. Yeah. So there's one of the settings screens where you can go in and change like male, female, age, and it will calculate what your target should be, and you can change it obviously. And then that was meant to be a target to show when you're going over that. I'm still probably going to make a few updates to how that works exactly.
Okay. And then are you using Core Graphics to draw the the whole bar.
Bar chart, yeah. I'm going to have a quick check to remind myself what it was that we're using. There was a free graphing, charting bit of code. So I'm going to have to look up what that was.
You use like a third-party library?
Yeah, but so the bars are actually, but the bars are put in, they are actually like UI views. They've just been put in there, and the length of the bar has been determined by the value it should have. And they've been on this one, I think I've rotated them through 90 degrees, and that took a bit of figuring out. So I can put text in there as well that will show up 90 degrees. But essentially they're just like UI labels that have been sized to the correct size and colored to the color that I want. And that's it. I mean, that's all a bar chart is, really, a bunch of rectangular blocks.
Yeah, that looks nice though. So what was the, when you guys were planning this out, what was your planning process? Did you have one? Did you just kind of go at it and kind of figure out what you're doing along the way? I would imagine that, like, especially since you're working with somebody else, your wife, you kind of had to come up with some kind of system to do what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, well, we started off just with this basic idea. It was going to be one screen that showed the, you know, that people can choose their drinks on, and then another screen that's going to show their progress. So, you know, we had a very simple structure for it, which makes things a lot simpler. You know, I've done another app which is a lot more complicated, but, you know, it's just essentially meant to be two screens, but then obviously it's grown into a settings screen and an about screen and a purchasing screen. But we just got that. We came up with the idea, and, you know, we just sat down for one afternoon, probably at Starbucks, just going through what was it we wanted to include in there. So, and then it just evolved. So we started off with the basic idea. We want to show the drinks. We wanted the artwork in there, obviously, and we wanted the calorie count. We've got this idea. We want it to evolve slightly to be a little bit more like opinionated. So we want it to start to have an option where you can, it will start coming up with comments. So for example, if you're getting close to your calorie limit for the week, it will start come up with comments saying, are you really sure you want to be buying that? You know, would it be better having this instead? You know, that was our idea of like having this slightly opinionated app that helps you track things, but also will try and
shame
guide you.
Yeah,
might not have gone with that essentially, but yeah, if you're wanting to, shame you. But yeah, just like, yeah, that kind of, I suppose, you know, the carrot style of app where it's just maybe not so strongly, but just jokily trying to keep you on a path that you're wanting, you know, lower calories. So we had that basic idea and just sat down and had that. And then from there, it was just through me producing something, like creating a layout. And I think over the next 1.5 weeks, we kind of finalized down exactly what we wanted on the, in the layout, and then stuck with it. Cause yeah, as I said, we were hoping, we had the idea about 4 weeks ago and we thought we want to get this out before the new year. And so we had a pretty tight schedule and we haven't actually got all the features in there that we're wanting to get in at some point, but you know, just wanted to try and get something out and see how it does.
That's awesome. So, and I had seen a screenshot of your, I think I saw it in the Swift Coders Slack group, but somebody had a screenshot of your, you've got like a, what you show the calories on. It's mm-hmm. like a, it looks like a little chalkboard essentially.
Yeah,
and then it gives an amount of time that you have to of doing something. Like I'm looking at one of them, it says 5.1 hours of desk work to burn 190 mm-hmm. calories, and then 42 minutes of swimming to burn 472. But on the iPhone X, it looks like it's hanging from the notch. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, we're kind of like, yeah, exactly how to do that. We're wondering about whether not to have any rope there, but yeah, just looks quite nice using the notch.
Oh, yeah. You embrace the notch.
Embracing the notch.
That's what they wanted. That's what they wanted. So you're also working on another app, I believe, that you had told me about when you wanted to come on the show, and it's for teacher tracking their class schedules, I think it was.
That's right, yeah. So that one, I'm kind of, during this school break, going to try and make some finishing touches to that. It's been a much, much longer process. That one is, actually had a quick look the other day. I found out through the Slack group a way to figure out what the number of lines were in the code. And I noticed that for the Latte Pilates app, apart from some of the shared stuff, it's about 3,000 lines of code. And for the working class, it's about 15,000. And I was like, wow, that's a lot more complicated. So I mean,
you're calling it working class? Is that what
working class? Yeah, that's what we're going to go with. Cool. And yeah, so the idea is essentially it's something for me to use. I mean, that's where the inspiration came for it. So I was like, there's other apps out there for teachers, but there's nothing that really quite fits me. That's one of the things, being a programmer, often look at a program and think, yeah, that's good, but I really wish it would do this or this or this. And then, yeah, I'd kind of realize I could try and make it. So,
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, so yeah, with the working class app, the idea was I wanted something that in the classroom, I could just be holding my phone and do the tasks that I normally want to do. The main thing would be, you know, have my class list, be able to quickly pull up a photo of a student, because I'm terribly bad at remembering who's who. Pick a random student from the class, assign work to the class. I like to, at the end of a lesson, I like to write the homework up on the board. So I've just got a way to use the app to add a new assignment, give it a quick title and take a photo of the board that I can then email to all the students. And it's basically, the idea is everything that I personally would want to do in the classroom on my phone, nice and easy, not too many screens and nothing else. So trying not to put in any unnecessary bloat.
That's pretty good. You know, I think the best ideas come from experience. It's really hard to come up with just something to program if you don't have a need for it. And I think that's something that a lot of people face, is that they don't consider like the issues that they have in their day-to-day life, whether it's whether it's like you're doing with your app, you couldn't find anything out there that did what you wanted it to do. I think a lot of people get stuck on trying to just make something and publish it without actually considering, like, is this really solving a problem?
Mm. Yeah. But, and also just the fact about using it or not. I mean, I made a, when the stickers just first came out, I realized, oh, I can do a bit of programming. I did something which allows people to make stickers, and yeah, I'm pretty proud of it, but we don't really use stickers very much. So it becomes an app that I don't use very often. And it's just, you get a very different feel, I think. If it's an app that you want to use and you're building it and you're using it all the time, you just get a much bigger insight into what works, what doesn't work, and really, really want to fix anything that's not quite right.
Yeah, I agree with that. What the project that I'm working on has to do with inventory, and that's a huge pain point. Like, and I didn't actually ever consider this for, I never considered this being an issue, because at other companies that I worked at, you know, most of the time we have technology that will take care of, like, you know, like scanning inventory and, like, you know, doing counts. Like, you'd take your scan gun and then you'd scan like a barcode label, and then you could, you know, put in your count on the thing, and then it would sync up with your enterprise software. That's not how my company has it done. And we would be considered like a medium sized company.
Mm-hmm.
And if a medium sized company doesn't have the resources to get some of this equipment, I mean, there's probably all sorts of other companies that don't have these kind of resources. And then, not to even mention smaller companies that, you know, inventory is really a big, you know, it's the biggest expense for a company to have on the books. It is, like, aside from, you know, it, a lot of times even more so than payroll, you know, inventory is a huge cost to have on your books, and to not actually have something that's more automated and streamlined to sit there and go around with like a clipboard and then handwriting all your product numbers down as well as the counts, and then doing all the counts, man, it's just a nightmare. So that's why I started working on this. I was like, you know what, there's a better way to do this. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. And it's really helped me as well, just because of, yeah. And also getting the app out on the App Store as well has just made me look at all the little problems as well. It's one of the things I've really learned from the Latte Pilates app is we made it and tested it and thought, yeah, this looks pretty good. Put it out on the App Store and suddenly realize, oh, hang on. No, that's, if I was downloading this, then that looks a little bit weak. That looks a little bit funny. And so it's kind of like a two-way process. One, I'm using it, so I want it to be good. But then also getting it out there onto the App Store means that I want to, like, you know, file down any rough edges and things like that. So I really recommend anyone to actually get their apps out on the App Store.
Yeah, I still have yet to do that, but soon. Soon. Who knows how long soon is? Soon is always further away than you think.
Yeah, keep getting pushed back as well, doesn't it? Yeah.
So let's back up a little bit. So when you first decided to learn Swift, mm-hmm. what was the approach that you took to start learning? Did you pick up some tutorials? Did you just start, you know, doing it by trial and error, like running around some playgrounds, looking up documentation? How did you approach learning Swift?
I think what I did first really was read Apple's very, very detailed, in many ways, very dry book on Swift. But I just love reading that sort of thing and learning about it. I like learning, basically. So I read through pretty much all of that. And then I looked at some other things as well. So I think in the early days, hacking with Swift was, like, probably my main go-to. I just worked through probably only about a third of the tutorials at the start there, but yeah, they just taught me so much and got me really hooked onto it. And then I just wanted to start running. So I kind of, after I'd done quite a lot of those, I thought, I don't want to do his things anymore. I want to do my own things. And yeah, I just started running with it. So essentially, I think it was around when Swift 2 came out, and it was, yeah, reading that book. I'm trying to think, there's a couple of other books that I bought as well, but nothing really impacted me as much as Apple's book and Hacking with Swift.
That's cool. Yeah, I hear I'm a huge Paul Hudson fan. He's who wrote Hacking with Swift. Yeah. So I definitely don't disagree with you there. What was the first project that you worked on after messing around with Hacking with Swift? The financial calculator?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how long ago that was. That must have been pretty early on.
What so you started learning around Swift too? What was and how? I'm trying to think of because I know it came Swift 2 came out. Was it early in 2016? Or did it come out when did Swift 2? I don't know exactly when Swift 2 came out, but I do know that when it went from Swift 2 to 3, and I started learning during Swift 3, but I do know that going from Swift 2 to 3 was a huge pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was that like? What was that like approaching that as a beginner at the time? Because
I think that because I was a beginner, so none of my code was particularly complex. And I don't think it was a big pain for people like me. There were some things, but Xcode generally led you through most of those changes, I think. So, you know, I hadn't written anything that really got deep into, you know, any complicated structures or anything like that. So it wasn't too painful for me.
I just every time I look at old like Swift 2 stuff, it just like looks archaic almost.
Mm.
So I was just curious as since I actually I'm trying to think Swift 3 came out around after I think it you know officially came out for use in Xcode around WWDC 2016.
Right,
I don't remember.
Yeah,
but yeah, I didn't start learning until this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
So. I was already pretty much over and done with. I didn't hear anybody complain about Swift 2 to 3 hardly anymore. And it was pretty much all said and done with.
Yeah. I think the other thing as well, because I was working on fairly small projects, so kind of finish one and then I don't have to worry too much about changing it over to a new version of Swift because it's essentially done. Yeah, I might need to go back and fix one or two things, but I said, yeah, the financial calculator one was would have been a very small audience, so there wasn't much need for changing on that. And I think I must have started the working class app probably started after the transition anyway. So, you know, I haven't had to change very much.
How long you've been working on the working class app?
Must be about a year because I mean, remember, I'm a teacher full time, so it's like I don't get much time for coding until the breaks come around. So, yeah, it's been quite a long process. I had it essentially mostly complete at the end of the last academic year. So, this term, I've been testing it myself. So, I've used it for a full term myself and just finding any small problems. It has worked absolutely fine for me, but it's like knocked. Yeah, it's that last few percent that's going to take ages just to get it polished off.
Right. No, I understand what you're saying there. I've got a project that I've been working off and on for about the same time. So I completely understand it there. More of a passion project than anything.
Yeah. But I mean,
like super useful, like nothing that I could really, I wouldn't see myself making any money off of it or anything, but.
Yeah. I mean, I've got some hopes for the working class. If other teachers find it useful as well, then it's got potential to do all right, I think. But yeah, I made it for myself, but I think it's looking pretty professional at the moment, but there's just those little things. Like I've got at the moment a progress view that for some reason, if it goes below 30%, it just seems to be stuck on 30%. It doesn't seem to show 10% progress for some reason. And I spent 2 hours yesterday trying to figure out what was going wrong, and I could spend another 2 days trying to figure it out, and who knows. It's those last little things which, using it myself, I can kind of ignore, but I've got to fix it before I can put it on the App Store.
Yeah, and you don't want to... I know whenever I'm making something, it's like whenever you're using it for yourself, you can make little excuses for like small things like that. It's like, oh, it works great, except for, you know, for some reason, this progress view is not really acting, right? But when you release it, you can't really do that. You can't put in your release notes. Everything works great except for that progress bar.
Yeah.
I mean, so just ignore the progress bar.
It's another thing that my wife's great for, because show her an app and I say, oh, it's really good apart from this bit. And she'll say, yeah, but that bit's bad. And I was like, I know, but but that bit's bad. Okay, thank you. It's really helpful. But it's like, it's like, yeah, I know, I'm trying to ignore that.
That's funny. Are there any other projects that you've been cooking up with? Like, you have any other plans for after releasing Working Class? Do you have any other stuff that you're wanting to work on?
Not quite sure. We just started trying to think about certain things, but don't really know at the moment. We've kind of our time's been taken up with, as I was working on Working Class, and then we took some time out of that to do Latte Pilates. Carry on with the sticker apps. But yeah, we just started trying to think of, what could possibly come next. I mean, to be honest, the thing that excites me at the moment is with Latte Pilates, there are things that I want to put in it. Like, originally, every time I do a project at the moment, I think, okay, what can I do that's going to be new? So with Working Class, I taught myself core data and a few other things. With Latte Pilates, I was thinking, okay, I want to do a watch app, which is not part of it at the moment, but I thought, yeah, that could be, just an idea of like, okay, it's a technology I haven't learned before, and I want to just, at the moment, it's partly do these projects, but each time I do one, learn a new skill, learn a new framework or something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I had only dabbled in core data myself just a little bit, and then for this project that I'm working on now, I didn't really think I needed persistence at the beginning of the project. And then the whole idea was for this app is to be able to take the inventory and then have it send off a count to like via email to like say the inventory manager or yourself, whoever you set up the email to go to. It just sends a CSV file. And then, it can be manipulated easily on the computer from there. As I was working through it, I had worked on it for about a week and a half, and what I'd found, I was like, well, what if they mess up the count? I was like, then they need to fix it. It's like, well, how do they fix it? Okay, so now, because what I was doing was just saving these files to the phone, which were then going to just be emailed off. And I don't know why I didn't consider that part of it, but as I was using it, I was like, well, I need to edit this. I was like, wait, so now what I have to do to edit it is to load the file, parse it, pull up that line, and then allow them to edit the information. And then essentially the only easy way to do that was to just overwrite the file. And then and then when I was trying to bring up information to do that, then I realized, okay, now I'm having to instantiate all of my structs with strings. So now I've got all this brittle code. Like it was just a nightmare. I was like, you know what? Like I went so far down this rabbit hole that I felt like I had to just keep going down this broken way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at it. I was like, you know what? I'm going to buckle down. I had actually bought a core data book like months ago. I was like, I'm just going to buckle down for 2 days, plow through this core data book for the bits that I really, really need to get this working. And then I figured it out. And now it's like works so smoothly. It's not even a problem. Like now I can edit and now I'm not even saving files to disk. I'm saving a temporary file that's then emailed. And then it's just not even a thing anymore. I don't have to traverse the file system or do anything. It's just, if I would have done that to begin with, I probably would only spend a week on the app, like to get all the business logic, all the important bits done. I still have other work to do, but it's mostly complete after 2 weeks. I need to tweak UI and stuff like that. But all the underlying business logic that actually makes like all the features are implemented now, it's just making it look good.
Yeah, it makes me think I should do a future project where I actually have to use the file system, because at the moment I just get so confused and have so many problems anytime I have to try and save something to file or something like that. I mean, most people think that's relatively easy, I think, and core data is horrible. But because I've learned core data, it's just, yeah, I can use core data, but I can't save things to disk properly and reliably because I just don't know how to do it.
Yeah, there's actually a, String has a method that you can just save straight to disk with. So if you have like a, say you've got like an array of strings or whatever,
right,
that like say it's like your input from your app somewhere, and you could have like an array of strings or whatever, and then you could you could flatten it out essentially, and then you can join it. I forget exactly what you do. I'd have to look at my code because this is part of what I was doing when I was doing this. And you just put the new line character at the end, and you write it all the file, and then it'll spit out like a text file or whatever, okay. Whatever you want to save it as. And then there's different document. There's documents directories, and then there's app directories. There's a few different directories, but yeah, if you want your users to interact with it, there's the documents directory. And that's relatively, once you fiddle around with it, it's pretty easy to pick up. The only thing you have to really worry about is making sure that I prefer to use URLs, but you don't always get to use URLs for some of the methods. I think File Manager has a method called contents of file at path, and anything that's at path is string. Right. So then you gotta, sometimes you gotta go back and forth from URL to strings.
I think that's what's always confused me when I've tried to get into it, just the URLs and or not URLs and things like that. So I've got to actually go and do it sometime, and then I'll learn how to do it.
Yeah. If you go back to Hacking with Swift, I know Paul Hudson messes with the file system a bit, in a few of the courses and tutorials. That's pretty much where I picked up the basics, and then I just kind of went to the documentation from there.
Yeah, but I definitely, the way I learn is really on a kind of like a need to know sort of thing. So yeah, say core data, I've learned core data. I haven't really, I've learned enough to be able to get myself a few functions that handle the core data, and I just use those functions. So I worked out the functions for the working class app, and then when I came to do the latte pilates, it was just, okay, take exactly that same function, even though the function was a bit more elaborate than what I needed, and just use exactly the same thing in the same way, and it works. So it's like I don't fully understand exactly what I'm doing with all of it, but it works, and that's enough for me at the moment.
Yeah, fortunately and unfortunately, I think for me, when I went into core data, my core data stack had to be a little complex because I had to do stuff in background threads, and I create child managed object contexts, right, to you know create new things and then save it back to the parent and all that kind of stuff. But whenever I export the file, I do that on a background thread, and I have to kick off an asynchronous private thread from the context, and then it didn't take me that long to figure out because of the book that I, it was a Ray Winderlich Core Data by Tutorials book, helped me kind of got me up to speed real quick. It's probably not all, I don't know all the ins and outs of core data by any means, but I was able to take the bits that I needed out of there so that I could, get up and running real quick.
Yeah. I mean, you're asking about where I got things from. I definitely use the Ray Winderlich site a lot. Cause there's a lot of good, there's a lot of good free tutorials on there that explain things very well. I mean, I wouldn't be making any money whatsoever probably if it wasn't for the tutorial on Ray Winderlich's site for in-app purchases, because again, that was just, I must have spent days and days and days trying to get that to work until eventually using that tutorial, probably for the third time that I tried, but eventually using that tutorial, I got it to work. And now every app, I just use the same system.
That's awesome. I haven't had to mess with that yet. What's it like implementing that?
It's doing things in the right order, really. But once I have, I said it took me days and days to get code which kind of that worked. And now when I go to a new app, all I have to do is I take that code across, remember to copy some, you know, change some data. So what the code that I've got up on the App Store, and essentially, yeah, I'm just taking the file from one app to another and it just works. That's for a straight off in-app purchase or, for subscriptions. I did think about doing a subscription model for the working class app. And to be honest, one of the reasons I was going away from it was I just haven't got it working yet. It just seems to cause so many problems, which might be my testing process or whatever, but I don't know. But yeah, so the, I could try and find the link sometime maybe, but the tutorial for straight off in-app purchases on Ray Vendelick's website, if you just follow it painstakingly through, it's a breeze.
Oh yeah, if you send me the link for that, I'll drop it in the show notes for everybody to see so they can take a look at that. What's it for restoring? You know how one of the requirements for in-app purchases is to be able to allow somebody to restore their purchases.
Yeah.
Is that a difficult problem to solve?
No, that's actually included in that part as well. So the restoring, the only thing that I found a little bit tricky has been updating the user so they know what's going on. So, if it succeeds, it does send a message. So I had to figure out a way to let the user do that and then update my app. So when they click on restore, when they click on buy, the code that, you know, got from the tutorial, and can't remember how much I've changed it, to be honest. I have to have a look back. But the code I got from there handles both restore and also for the purchasing. You just have to set up your button and make the function from the button trigger the restore. It's dead simple.
Okay. So I haven't gone down any of the purchasing or blocking off functionality. Whenever you do that, do you have two separate app targets in the bundle? Like how does that all work? Cause I haven't gone down, I'm going to go down that road in the future, but I kind of want to get an idea for what that process is actually like, because in my head I'm thinking you have two app bundles maybe. And then once you unlock it, then you use the other. I don't know. How does that work?
I'm very, very, very much small time. So I'm not particularly worried about people hacking into my app or for people like, you know, putting it onto an unlocked phone and things like that. So all I've got is that when they purchase it, it just sets a global variable, well, in my app defaults for has purchased, and just changes that to be has purchased equals true. And then when it goes through, so now once that's been set to be true based on the purchasing, when they click on a button for example, for saving a drink to their favorites in the app, it just checks, has the app been purchased? If true, proceed. If not, take them to the purchase screen.
Okay.
And I'm sure that's very easy for someone to circumvent or for someone to hack it and put it onto the black market or something. But to be honest, if that's the least of my worries.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I didn't really consider that. Yeah, that's pretty well. It works, and
it works. Yeah,
and you still get paid. So
that's right. Yes, I'm sure I'm not losing any money out of it at the moment. I mean, to be honest, with the Latte Pilates app, so for testing, I might put in just a little bit of code saying that has purchased equals true. For about 24 hours on the App Store, the version that you could have downloaded had that in. So basically, anyone who downloaded it for 24 hours would have got the app for free because I'd left in a bit of debug code saying that they purchased it.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, when you're getting started. So for me, this is a little, part-time hobby work really. Maybe I'll make some money out of it, but I'm just getting things that work. It might not be the best way to do it. It might not be a very robust way of doing it, but it works. And I do try to take care of making sure that my code is also useful and reusable and things like that. I was thinking I could give a shout out to Bart Jacobs, who you had on previous podcast. although I, to be honest, I haven't actually bought his products, but the, you know, signing up for his emails, the information he gave in there just got me inspired for trying to tidy up my code. So I spent quite a few weeks rewriting, well, refactoring quite a lot of the working class app to use the MVVM model and just get everything to be clean and neat. And also that also means reusable. So I was able to reuse some of that in the Latte Pilates just because it was like, oh, all the logic is here and I'm going to use some of the same logic in the other app. I didn't have to go searching through my horrible view controller anymore. I could just take the functions I needed and use them somewhere else. It was really, really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. MVVM is pretty, it's pretty fun to use. And you know, the nice thing about it is that some of the other architectures, I think, try to dance around Cocoa. I feel like MVVM doesn't really do that, though. I mean, it's I feel like if something drastically changes with the Cocoa frameworks, that it's still going to be okay because it's essentially just another structure class that you're making that just separates the logic a little bit. I don't think it's really going to make it I don't think it'll be made obsolete by Apple changing something.
I don't think so. And even if, well, it won't be obsolete, but if something changes, then you'll be able to go in and find the bits that need changing and change those individual parts rather than having to dig through your whole code base.
Yeah. So, hey, Graham, we're running a little low on time now, but is there anything that you want to discuss before we sign off?
No, I don't think so. I think we had quite a good fully rounded discussion.
Yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on the show. And if anybody wants to get a hold of you, how can they get in touch with you?
Either go to find us at appsandliving.com. And you know, we're starting to post a few things up on there. Or most of the time, we're tweeting and Facebooking and things from at Latte Pilates at the moment, because that's the thing that we're trying to get out there.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks again for coming on the show and have a good one.
Okay. Thanks a lot for having me. It's been great fun.
And that concludes this episode of the Learn Swift podcast. I hope our discussion left you feeling inspired and that you're not alone. If you enjoyed the show, please consider telling a friend, recommending the show on Overcast, or leaving a review on iTunes. If you want to be on the show or just say hello, you can reach me on Twitter at Steven_0351. Thanks, and see you next time.